So I'd like to share with you some thoughts about S-duality, and this is going to be a work to be published. Hong. So I'm going to work with the self-dual gauge group, UN. In fact, for reasons that I'll explain later, I'm never really going to talk about N bigger than 6. We have the complex coupling constant. And we have the S-duality operator that takes us from the Hilbert space of the UN theory with coupling constant tau to the Hilbert space of the theory of the coupling constant minus 1 over tau. This is really the object of our quest. Now the space-time is going to be mostly R3, 1 to start with. I might compactify time. Or think about the weak rotation of this, where space-time is going to be S1 cross R2, 1. Or S1 cross a torus. Mostly I'm going to concentrate on these space times. And I'll work in the temporal gauge. So, for the abelian case, we have an exact description of the S-duality operator's the Fourier transform, as explained in David's talk. It takes us from a wave function of the gauge field A, which is now connection on R3, the first R3, 1 case. And there is some kind of Fredholm kernel that we're supposed to integrate over all gauge fields. And that gives us the dual wave function. In general, for a general SL2Z transformation, more generic than S-duality, that takes tau to A tau plus B over C tau plus D. I'll add another line to distinguish this from a exterior derivative. There's an explicit expression for S. The integral of the dual gauge field times d plus the Chern-Simons term in the dual gauge field plus the coupling of the dual gauge field with the original gauge field original gauge field plus the Chern-Simons term in the dual gauge field. The way to see this is it's easy. We want S as an operator to satisfy that if I act on it with the electric field on the left, I get the combination of the electric and magnetic fields on the right. And vice versa, if I act with the magnetic field on the left, I get a combination of electric and magnetic fields on the right, like this. And you get the expression above by identifying the electric field with the canonical momentum. So looking at this expression, we first observe that it's topological. Sorry. So this operator, that's the operator over there. But let me now generalize it to depend on some SL2Z. SL2Z matrix. So this is the normal D and this bold face D. That's why. Right. Unfortunately. Yeah, probably. Maybe that's not a bad idea. There is a C here. There's no B because you can determine B from A, B, and C. And there is C in the denominator. Yeah, thanks. I forgot that one. Fractional. Yes, good. So I'll talk about that in a minute. So this is at this level. This is well defined. And the first observation that we make here is we see that it's topological. I just solve these equations. So we see that if first of all, this is the same formula that David talked about for minus 1, 1, 0. This just becomes the integral of A, which dA. And this is the factor that David used to connect over the boundary from a theory to the dual. For a special case of S. And then for other cases, so SL2Z, let me write it here. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think the first place where I've seen it was the paper by Lozano from 94 or maybe 95. Since SL2Z. Oh, okay. This is the abelian case, yes. Right, and to answer the question about whether it's well-defined or not, so A wedge DA is well-defined, and then you can build you can build SL2Z from these two generators. This acts as this it's abelian Fourier transform, and that acts by just multiplying the wave function by Chern-Simons, and then you can build everything from that. But if we look at it, we make an immediate observation that it's topological. It's independent of the metric. Well, it's because it's not just Chern-Simons, right? It's part of an integral. But this is not the whole action, right? I mean, I need to. Yeah, but I need to integrate over OA. It's just the combination of, if this is gauge invariant, if these two operations are gauge invariant, then the combination of them. No, I think this is the integral kernel. You can check that it does that. Well, because after integration, it will work, right? We need to integrate. Yeah, sure. All right, these are wave functions in temporal gauge. No, I see the problem, but if you don't mind, I'll address it in a minute where I'll actually get to the point that I'm trying to get, and then I'll go back to. Yes, but let me just go a few more minutes, and then I'll come back to exactly the point that Anton is making. So it's topological. Actually, up to a gravitational Chern-Simons term that I don't want to get into, but it's related to the anomaly that Witten discussed of S-duality, and also a similar term that appears in Chern-Simons theory as well, but that's not the main focus of my talk. The other thing that we see is that if we set A equals a dual up to a gauge transformation, this kernel becomes just Chern-Simons action, and the level k is a plus c minus 2 over c. So so the question is, what is the generalizations of these, or what is the generalization of that last statement for UN? So let's first put it in a more physical context, the question. Setting A equals to A tilde implies that the original Hilbert space and the end Hilbert space are identified. So I need to work with the self-dual tau. The solution of a self-dual tau is there are only two solutions, basically. Either tau equals to I, and then the element is plus or minus S duality, or tau equals I pi over 3, and then the element that fixes it as 1 minus 1, 1 plus minus. And in all three cases, the level k, of course only the absolute value matters, is an integer. And we can realize Chern-Simons at levels 1, 2, and 3. So but what does it mean to set A equals to A dual? Well, the physical setting, we can realize the question as follows. We start with the U1 gauge theory and compactify on S1, but we add boundary conditions whereby we close the theory up to an S-duality. So this is the S1, and here we put an S-duality twist. If we think about this S1 as a Euclidean time direction, then what we're doing, in effect, is when we insert operators in that setting, we're calculating the operators with the S-duality operator. So the Chern-Simons action would appear in the infrared equal to 2 pi r. In the infrared limit, when we take our r goes to 0, we see immediately that we should get just pure Chern-Simons theory. So this is U1 Chern-Simons theory at levels 1, 2, and 3. And what the Chern-Simons theory does, what correlators of operators in the Chern-Simons theory will be, say Wilson lines, they'll be probing the S-duality operator, or at least the diagonal part of the S-duality operator. So it makes sense to see if we could generalize this to the non-abelian case, we might get some more clues about what the non-abelian S-duality operator is. And this is a special case of boundary conditions. So it's of course, directly related to the kinds of questions that Davide discussed in his talk. So let me just write for completeness the three cases that I'll be discussing. So I'm going to work with the self-dual value of the coupling constant so that I could close the theory, would identify the Hilbert space of the theory with its S-dual. This is a quadratic equation, but if I want a solution with a non-zero coupling constant, or non-infinite coupling constant, I should say, then the denominator has to be a phase. And as I said, there are three cases. So one is the S generator, and that is k equals to 2. And realizing the torus is a lattice, the fundamental cell is going to be a square. And the other two cases are corresponding to hexagonal lattices. Both with both with tau equals I pi over 3. And I'm going to define k as just the number a plus e minus 2 over c without committing at this stage as to whether it's at Chern-Simons level or not. So this is the same lattice. And what happens at these special values is that this general SL2 Z transformation also becomes an orthogonal transformation. So for the square lattice, it's just a rotation by 90 degrees. And for the other lattices, it's a rotation either by 60 degrees or by 120 degrees. To formulate the theory, I'd also want to have some supersymmetry involved. And that's because maybe this is a good time to tell you what I'd like to say in this talk. So I'd like to identify the Hilbert space of states of the infrared limit of this compactification. This is not the same H as the one I had at the beginning of the talk, and I had a bar on it. So this compactification, which leaves just two space dimensions, which I can then compactify on T2, this is a finite dimensional Hilbert space, and then I'd like to compare it with Chern-Simons theory. Our first naive guess was that it should be just the same, but we will see that it didn't quite work that way. And number two, I'd like to identify in some more detail some operators on this finite dimensional Hilbert space. The technique that I'll use is with an index technique. So I'm going to need supersymmetry. But unfortunately, the setting that I just described over here is not supersymmetric. The reason is, as Anton and Witten explained in their papers, is that the supersymmetry charges are not invariant under S-duality. They get multiplied by a phase. I'll write it down a little more clearly here. So with the standard notation of n equals to 4 super Young Mills fields, the gauge field, fermions, the R is an R symmetry index. I should use that notation. And they're complex conjugates and scalars. And with complex combinations of the scalars, like so, the supercharges transform in the opposite, in the dual representation of R symmetry. So the R symmetry is SU4, the fermions that are left moving transform in the fundamental representation of SU4, and the superchargers transform in the dual. That's why I put the index down. an S-duality. Multiplies the q's by a phase. Now this phase is exactly what I called e to the iv, the square root adds a half. Takes three values, basically 2π/3 or for 4π/3 in this context. So we have to be careful about the two, but if done carefully, this phase is either I or something of order 6 or a third root of unity. And we need to cancel it in order to preserve supersymmetry. To cancel it, we need to augment the setting with an R-symmetry twist. Meaning that we simply take a non-trivial R-symmetry bundle on the circle. So now we have the boundary conditions S1, direction 3, where we close by an S-duality twist and an R-symmetry twist. And the R-symmetry twist, the one that preserves the maximal amount of supersymmetry, is an element in SU4. What that means is that if this direction is x3, and this is 0 plus, and this is 0 minus, is that the scalar fields, or better yet, the complex combinations, just before and just after, or actually, let me start with fermions. Are related by a phase. In an appropriate basis, I can take, are related by the action of gamma in SU4. In an appropriate basis, I can take the action to be diagonal. And if I want to cancel as many of these phases as possible, I'll just take three of them to be that exact same phase that appears in Q, hence the opposite phase appears in psi. And that would lead to six unbroken supersymmetries in 3D. The 3D here is what lives on the remaining dimensions, 2, 1. Let's call them directions 0, 1, and 2. And now I can formulate my physical question exactly. I want to know what is the infrared limit of this configuration. It's the radius of the circle, which unfortunately is also denoted by R, shrinks to 0. And we're already suspecting that it should have something to do with Chern-Simons theory. In the U1 case, it should be exactly Chern-Simons theory. Now, one could say that I've added all these fermions and scalars in the n equals to 4 Young Mills. But because of the R-symmetry twist, all the fermions and scalars, none of them have periodic boundary conditions. So they give energy levels which are of the order of 1 over R, the compactification scale. they completely drop out in the infrared. And then we're just left with the Chern-Simon. So we stand a chance to end up with a topological theory at low energy. But there's another complication. We have half an hour, so let me just address that other complication. The question is there might be some extra zero modes. Low energy. And to explore this possibility, well, I can't rule it out completely, but let me first rule out a Coulomb branch, or see what we need to do to rule out a Coulomb branch. So with these boundary conditions on the fermions, due to the R symmetry twist, there has to be accompanying non-trivial boundary conditions for the scalars, because the scalars are also in non-trivial representations. And in this basis that I've written, the boundary conditions are basically just multiplied by the phase that you get from the SL2Z element. The phase is never zero. It's one of these phases. So when we get to the vacuum expectation value, we're tempted to say that there's no non-zero solution, so no Coulomb branch. But of course, this is a bit too fast, because I could multiply by a gauge group before the identification. Let me add this. Now, if I want a Coulomb branch, they also need to satisfy the minimum of the potential conditions, which implies that I'm already restricting to some kind of a diagonal form for the scalar fields. They're re-algebra valued. So the lambdas doesn't live in the full UN, because that would destroy the diagonal form. It has to live in the Weyl group, which is a permutation group. So now the question is there a solution like this, the equation? If there is a zero mode, then Z should be independent of the direction of the circle. So I can just erase the dependence on the compactification circle and just look for matrices that solve these equations. If there is a solution, then lambda is an element of the permutation group, has to have order, has to have an eigenvalue of the IV in this representation. So it has to be of order 2 pi over V, no less. And the orders that we get here are 4, 3, and 6. So if we restrict to n, which is less than this order, and less than 4 in the case of the standard disduality element, then it looks like we should be good. There should be no moduli, and the low energy theory should be topological. So I'm going to make these restrictions. Now, and then maybe towards the end, I'll address the case of going past these restrictions. All right, so our setting is un n equals to Fourier melts, compactified in a circle with S-duality twisted boundary conditions augmented with R-symmetry twist, and N restricted to be less than 4, say, if I work with tau equals to I. Doesn't leave too many choices, but I think there's still some non-trivial ones there. What about the other directions? So I want the other directions, and I want also my convention to be. So S1 is in direction 3. And the other directions, I need to take some 3 manifolds. Some 3 manifolds in 3. And specifically, this talk, mostly I'll concentrate on the simplest case, the E2, the 2 torus. And direction 0 will be time. This is Stern-Simons theory. We expect a finite dimensional Hilbert space, just the Hilbert space of Stern-Simons theory on T2 at the level 1, 2, or 3 mentioned before. And I now want to use string theory to see if I can count these states. So I need to identify another parameter. Realizing this system in string theory is not hard, the UN Yang-Mills theory will live on the free brains wrapping direction 3, wrapping directions 0, 1, 2, and 3. And the idea is that S-duality in string theory has, in a different U-dual representation, a completely geometric realization . There are versions of the same theory, different range of parameters, where there is an actual physical torus, not the same as this one, so noted by tilde, complex structure tau. And S-duality is just the change of basis. So in this case, the torus is a square. S-duality is just an isometry of this torus. So we need to find the transformation that takes us from this background to that background. And presumably, in this background, the question will be just geometrical. In fact, we'll see that it will be geometrical, but plus string theory will have to be interjected at one crucial point to help us identify how many bound states of various objects there are. So we draw a standard diagram of directions and brains. These are the brains. And I start up with type 2b, where I have a D3 brain wrapped in direction 3, and I'll also denote by this division sign, or indicate like this. This is the direction of the twist, and the brain wraps all directions. And I want to find the appropriate U-duality transformation that will convert this setting to something useful. So I'll do T-duality in direction 1. Then I get into a D2 brain. Then lift it to M theory, because we know that the setting where this is geometric is M theory. So now we have direction 10. Makes it an M2 brain. The M2 brain does not wrap this direction. And then reduce back to type 2A. direction 2. Basically, so turning the deep brains into fundamental strings, they're now not wrapping. Well, now there is no direction 2 anymore, in fact. And they're not wrapping neither direction 10 nor direction 1. So we end up with a question in string theory, which is the following. You have some fundamental strings in some homology class that I'll describe in a minute, in some geometrical space that looks like this. The space is X, three-dimensional. It has a vibration over S1, which is direction 3. Actually, a fiber bundle, not just a vibration, of a torus, which is the torus in direction of 1 and 10. And the torus turns out to be exactly the torus, the promised torus of complex structure tau. And the structure group is just Z4, rotations by 90 degrees. So here I have the base, this one. Over each point in the base, I have the torus of complex structure exactly I, so fundamental cell is the square. And as I go once around the torus, I need to rotate it by 90 degrees. Let me think about this as the fundamental cell in some lattice where I realize the torus is Z minus IZ. And then I rotate it and then identify using the lattice identifications. And I need to find, the three brains are NT3 brains that are wrapping, that are in a homology class in this theory that project to n times the fundamental class of S1. And I need to count how many ground states and we immediately see that how many ground states just becomes, in the limit where everything is large, a geometric question of how many minimal length strings, how many non-trivial configurations of minimal length strings we have in this setting. To be more precise, if I do, let me first this actually might be too fast because there might be a multiplicity, so let me address the question of multiplicity later. So what would be a minimal length string? So a string configuration in this setting is a section of the vibration. So for each point on the circle, I need to just say where the string, the fundamental string, which is what used to be the D3 brain, where it passes through the fiber. This is for n equals to 1. But it's obvious that to be minimal length, for example, I can have a string configuration that, let's say, passes through this point just before the place where I put the twist. So after the twist, this point is identified with that one. So I need to somehow interpolate from this point to that point throughout the other 0 to 2 pi directions. That's obviously going to be longer than the configuration. A minimal length configuration has to be a configuration where the section is constant. For example, if the string, say, just passes through the origin, which is invariant under the twist, that would be minimal length. So the problem reduces to counting the number of fixed points of this action of rotating the torus by 90 degrees. So let's see what we get, and let's see if we can compare this with the Hilbert space of Chern-Simons theory on T2. So now that we have agreed that these strings, which used to be the Dufree brains, and turned into sections of this fiber bundle, have to correspond to constant sections, I just need to describe the state by describing a fixed point in the fundamental cell of the torus represented as a lattice. And for n equals to 1, there are just two fixed points. There's the origin, and there's the center. Center, of course, is, let me realize the isometry is rotation around, say, that origin for the drawing. This origin is, of course, fixed. That fixed point goes into that point after the rotation, which is equivalent in the lattice. For the other two cases, we get the following answer. The case where we had an hexagonal lattice and the rotation was by 60 degrees. It's not hard to check, but there's only one fixed point. The number of linearly independent states is 1. And for the case, this was the case where A, B, C, and D were 1, 1, minus 1. And for the case where the SL2Z element for the twist was minus that one, this was a rotation by 120 degrees in the lattice. There are now 3 fixed points. Now this theory, by an exact computation in the free field theory, has to correspond to Chern-Simons theory at level k on T2. U1 Chern-Simons theory, level k. That indeed has k states. In fact, the states are, the way to show it is, we take the T2, that this time this is the original T2, the physical one in directions 1 and 2, not the after-duality T2 that's represented here. There are two operators that we can construct on that Hilbert space. We can construct the Wilson line on cycle 1 and the Wilson line on cycle 2. And they satisfy this Hilbert algebra. And I'm going to ask in a minute, what are these W1 and W2s, and where do we see the Hooft algebra on this fiber bundle? But more interestingly, of course, we did all that exercise to find out what happens for n bigger than 1. And this is where string theory comes in. Let's say n equals to 2, for example. Tau equals to I. So this time, this section is multi-valued. what I need to find now is a configuration of string, that reduces to twice the fundamental homology class of the circle. So basically, I need to describe two points for each fiber. Now, we already know that these are constant sections. String times goes in x. So I just need to describe the location of these two points. Well, these two points can be either the origin or both of them the center. And there's a new ingredient that this configuration is also fixed, because if you rotate it, the two strings just exchange positions, but rotating this by 90 degrees will bring it to a configuration like that, which is the same. So there are three drawings, but there aren't three states here. The number of states I forgot another drawing. Of course, I can have one string going to this fixed point and the other going to that fixed point. So each of these two drawings, the strings are separate, give us one state in the Hilbert space. But for these drawings, we need to know how many bound states coincident strings have. The answer for D-brains is a little complicated, because you need to solve the problem in the Young-Mills theory. The problems that Betty, Stern, and company solved. But for string theory, the answer is simple. Strings just have a number of states as many as, the only thing you can do is basically just have a winding number. So, for example, this state could either be two one particle state, there are two separate strings, each happening to be at the same point. Or this could be two one-particle states, each with winding number one. Or it could be one-particle state. I'm sorry, I should say this is a two-particle state, each with winding number one, or a one particle state with winding number two. So this corresponds to two states. And same thing here. A total of six states. Now, I should also say that more precise string calculation shows that these are actually Ramon-Ramon ground states, but the multiplicity is one, so we're OK. I mean, in each sector that I've indicated, there's only one state. So let me. To reiterate, the place where string theory entered here, as opposed to just geometry, was in telling us what is the multiplicity of in situations where we have a multiplicity in the geometric drawing. So these are the results, counting. I have five or more minutes, right? These are the levels k just calculated from the SL2Z without making any commitment to Chern-Simons. And here I'm going to write the ends. The maximal order that we got is over here, which is order 6. So allowed order 6 of the SL2Z element. So I'm allowed to use n smaller than the order if I don't want moduli. This is what I get. So at level one, we find no surprise. K, the number of states, is exactly equal to the number of to K, to the anticipated K. N equals to 2, we find 369. N equals to 3, we're no longer allowed to use that, which is order 3. And then we get these numbers. Sorry. Okay, skip. Oh, that's, sorry. That is N equals to 3. And that actually doesn't match with the naive expectation of just UN Chern-Simons theory at level k, by which I mean, so actually we'll discuss for a minute, what do I mean by UN Chern-Simons theory at level k? So this would be SUN at level k cross U1 at some other level divided by dn. The level here, if we calculate the right normalization, it's actually kn. And the reason is, there's, of course, a free U1. If I'm working with the UN theory, there is a free U1 in n equals to 4 Young-Mills in my entire setting. And that should be easy to figure out what it does. That U1 is embedded by taking a gauge field of U1 diagonally embedded in UN. But that makes the coupling constant effectively n times bigger than, so that makes the U1 coupling constant, sorry, n times smaller than the UN coupling constant. So under S duality, that will turn into a coupling constant n times bigger than what I need. And the only way around it, what that means is that when I close the circle with an S-duality twist, the gauge field that I use here to write the A dual which the A action, which resides the BF type action, that has to be not this one, but the one that is n times smaller, so as to restore the coupling constant here to have an n in the numerator. Like so. But that means that in terms of the original variable, the level of Chern-Simons is n times bigger. So if k times n. So let's take SU2, for example. The number of states of SU2 level k on T2, this corresponds to representations up to order k. This gives k plus 1 states. The Zn division here is by large gauge transformations, and there is a gauge, there are basically n squared large gauge transformations on T2, because this corresponds to maps from pi1 to Zn, basically. So the upshot is that the total number of states that I would expect to have for n equals to 2 is k times 2 times k plus 1 divided by 2 squared. So for example, here, I would have expected 3, but I get 6. Looks like we have 2 copies. So how much time do I actually have? Maybe 2-3 minutes? Or thanks. So probably I won't have time to discuss the whole thing, but In order to identify what's going on here, let me refine the equivalence between the two Hilbert spaces of Chern-Simons theory and states of strings on the T2 fibered over S1 and identify some generators, some operators on the Hilbert space. And for simplicity, let me talk about the case n equals to 2. I'm sorry, n doesn't appear yet. And tau equals to I. Let me start with n equals to 1. So this was our space, T2 fibered over S1. And there are two operators that we can identify here. The first one is a type of vk, k equals to 2. Of course, in this case, that k could also be 1, 2, or 3. Vk-valued momentum. What that means is that if I have an invariant configuration, whatever it is, so here I'm drawing it for n equals to 1, but this should apply to any n from that finite list, I can just push it by this lattice vector, sorry, by this half lattice vector. So this is obviously an isometry that is commuting with the structure group, so extends to an isometry of X. Let me call that operation P. So P acts on the state where the string passed through the origin, returning it to a state where the string passes through the center. And P acts on the state where the string passes through the center, returning it to the state where the string passes through the origin. There's also another V2 operator in the Hilbert space, which corresponds to V2 winding. You see this? Let's calculate the homology of that space X. The homology is actually V plus V2. The V part comes from the homology of the S1. So a string basically just counts the windings. So let me call this generator alpha and this one beta. So N alpha plus W beta would be a string that winds n times around the base. And what beta does is this. Let me take the fiber. The fiber has homology Z squared generated by A and B, by the A and B cycles. But the S duality twist, which is now geometrical, takes the A and B cycles and turns them into minus B and A. And since I can push any configuration that wraps around the A cycle all the way around the circle, and then it'll come back wrapping the B cycle, I have to identify them in homology. So we learn that the homology is generated just by one of these, and they live in Z2. Now, I have to pick some choice of base for the cycles here, but strictly speaking, I should have called that if P is momentum. What I've done here is actually a translation. So I should have written it in the exponent. And I'm going to define my second generator as V2 generator is just e to the pi I times this coefficient W. And it turns out that e to the pi I W, probably out of time, so I'll just finish with that. On this state, well, here I can just determine the phase arbitrarily. And then for the other configuration, I get the phase minus. So what's my point? My point is that these two generators, e to the pi iw and e to the pi ip, should be identified in the original Chern-Simons theory with the Wilson line around one cycle and Wilson line around the second cycle. And you can see that they have the exact same commutation relation, and you can actually follow the dualities and get convinced that this is the right thing to do. So why did one appear in this momentum and the other one appear as winding? That's because the whole SL2Z large diffeomorphisms acting on the physical torus, so this is not the SL2Z of S-duality, but the actual physical diffeomorphisms, the ones that would be realized as a Ferlinde algebra on the Chern-Simons-Hilbert space, corresponds to T-duality on the string side. So using these tools, we can break up all these Hilbert spaces into representations of these T-dualities, basically looking at eigenvalues of the Ferlinde matrix and the Chern-Simons theory, and compare. And we find that these six are consistent with two copies of U2 level 2 Chern-Simons theory interpreted in this way. But we do find a discrepancy here. Here the representations actually don't match, because the representations of the Chern-Simons, the SL2Z acting on the Chern-Simons side are one-dimensional, but the representations that we get from string theory are not one-dimensional. So we're still puzzled by that, to be honest. It looks like it's not just Chern-Simons theory, if I had to come up with a conclusion. And I'm going to add with one other sentence and then stop. There was this restriction on n. What happens if n is bigger than 5? If n is bigger than 5, then we get moduli. What is the moduli space? So the simplest case to consider would be n equals to 4, would be this case. Here we get a moduli space, which turns out to be R6 cross P2 mod Z4, at least the naive guess. This also has n equals to 6 supersymmetry. In the infrared limit, this moduli space, of course, flows to R8 mod Z4, which is the same as the moduli space of the corresponding ABJM theory, k equals to 4. So this must be it. It's something we're looking at with Su Jong-Ray and J-Mo Park. So to conclude, looks like string theory allows us to probe the S-duality operator by identifying the Hilbert space of states of the compactification with an S-duality twist. We have to add some other ingredients to preserve supersymmetry. We can match the operators, but we do get a discrepancy. The discrepancy could either be a mistake that we made in the calculation, but probably it's not just Chern-Simons theory. Thank you very much. I don't know. Perhaps, so we had some discussion, I think, with Dan. It might be the Janus configurations where, if I want to work with a non-self-dual tau, I need something that interpolates. So basically, if I need other values of k, I need to interpolate from one. Yeah. So maybe with Janus configurations, one can do it. On the other hand, it breaks some supersymmetry, might add more moduli. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's definitely something that would be interesting to explore. Yeah, so probably this Janus domain wall, in a sense, is some other operator that brings me back to the Hilbert space in some other way. Presumably, but I don't know. I hope, hopefully. Yeah. Okay, thank you.